Welcome to Skills of the Future, a podcast by Perennial Talent. In this mini-series, we explore the cybersecurity skills and competencies needed to face the new realities of work.
Welcome to our Skills of the Future podcast, and our theme for this series is cybersecurity competencies needed to face the realities of work. My name is Christine Lamotte, president of Perennial Talent, and my guest today is Mark Potter. He is the Chief Information Security Officer at New Wave Telecom and Technologies. His responsibilities include security oversight of client federal systems and the internal corporate security program. Mark has worked in IT for over 25 years, including 15 years in information security, governance, risk management, regulatory compliance, and data protection privacy program design and implementation. He has worked for startups and Fortune 500 companies in multiple roles, including 9 years as a CISO, 6 years as a data and data warehouse architect, and 5 years as a software developer. Mark is an active member of multiple security and privacy associations, working groups, and standards initiative. He's passionate about learning, mentoring, and pushing out of one's comfort zone. He also happens to hold 31 security, privacy, and risk management certifications. Very impressive, Mark. We're so happy to have you on our podcast.
No, thanks for having me, Christine.
Oh, my pleasure. How are you surviving this pandemic?
Well, you know, I think it's still surreal for me, as it is for many people, how mask wearing's become the new norm. And, you know, we kind of get up, maybe change clothes before going to work and just jump right into it. So, yeah, keeping busy and looking forward to getting past all this COVID stuff, just like everybody else.
Yes, I perfectly understand. How has the world of work changed? And what has the impact been of more employees working remotely?
Yeah, I think for in the cybersecurity space, well, it's probably in most domains, it's become more competitive. Unfortunately, some companies, a lot of small businesses, have had to lay off workers. So even though there are so many open cybersecurity positions, the market has become more competitive for those positions. So, you know, the people that are out of work are actually competing for those roles. So I think that's one big difference in terms of people that are looking to land their next job or to break into the space. It's become a little more challenging to differentiate yourself these days. One of the other things that has changed is in a lot of companies, the endpoints are sort of within that protective boundary of the network security protections that corporations have in place. And now that everybody's working remotely, you know, the attackers are now focused on endpoints. If someone can get into an endpoint, then potentially they can be used as an on-ramp to get into the crown jewels of an organization. So there's been a shift in terms of putting a much stronger emphasis on the endpoints.
I bet. Yes, a lot of people I've interviewed have shared that as well. And it keeps a lot of them, you know, awake at night trying to figure out, you know, strategies and moves to deal with that. And I guess, like in the States, like in Canada, a lot of people are working from their own personal laptops, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think here it's probably the same, although the organization that I'm with, New Wave, is in the healthcare space, but more particularly most of the work that I do is in the government contracting space. So in that space, we're required to use, we require employees to use corporate-owned laptops. So we do have more control over that configuration of the endpoint.
Yes. And yes, that would reduce a lot of issues that come up when, I guess, you're working on your own personal laptop. What roles in cyber are becoming more important now, if any?
Yeah, good question. I think that, you know, red teams and pen testers are still highly in demand. Mm-hmm. That's it's a skill set that it's still sought after. It's not all that common to get to find individuals that are really passionate about. Mm-hmm. About that offensive security, because it changes so quickly that if mm-hmm. you're going to be in that space, you really have to stay on top of it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one area. But, you know, the blue team staff, the defensive staff, is also it's also a group of individuals where building out that skill set, the operational security side, mm-hmm. is something that a lot of organizations are still short-staffed on. You know, they have individuals that are serving in multiple roles, and mm-hmm. so to dedicate themselves to defending the network, it takes a broad range of skill sets under the hood to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And I guess the last thought I had on roles is mm-hmm. a lot of the work that we do in the government space has to do with compliance. Mm-hmm. And compliance is complex, it's important, but compliance without the end goal of security and privacy can become a paper exercise. And compliance and audit staff, I think, really need to understand what it means. You know, there's a term that's used in the audit space when they're looking at controls, that the controls are operating as intended and producing the desired outcomes. Mm-hmm. In order to really truly understand that, as an assessor or as a defender, mm-hmm. You need to understand what that means. You need to understand the concepts of defense in depth and architectural components that can help reduce your risk. So it's something that if you're secure, it's a lot easier to actually meet compliance requirements, but being compliant doesn't necessarily mean you're secure.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent point that you made. So sort of going with that question, and you touched on it a little bit, what skills or competencies do you feel are most important right now for the cybersecurity industry? And what is the industry doing to find and develop these skills right now?
Ooh, good question. I think, you know, as we were talking a little bit before started mm-hmm. the recording on the podcast, mm-hmm. I do think that the soft skills are really key. Oral and written communication, emotional mm-hmm. intelligence, problem solving, critical thinking, understanding of the business, you know, understanding sort of the why you're doing what you're doing, is important if you're going to do your job effectively and if you're going to be able to reach your stakeholders in a way where they understand your role and how it helps them achieve the overall corporate goals. Mm-hmm. I think on the more technical side mm-hmm. And process-oriented side, having cloud skill sets, you know, mm-hmm. be it AWS, Azure, Google, an understanding of Agile and Agile development life cycles, mm-hmm. DevSecOps, mm-hmm. and web application security and pen testing I listed kind of a laundry list of the purple unicorn working in security. To have all of those skills would be awesome, mm-hmm. but having an exposure to any or all of those can only help somebody who's in the space. I do think from what an industry is doing to find and develop the skills right now, it's been a real challenge because over the past, I don't remember if it was a SANS survey, but I do remember seeing a graph of training budgets over the past X number of years and the fact that it's been going down. So it's been challenging because, you know, this leaves, I mean, coaching can help with soft skills, although it's difficult to teach empathy. But companies are often hiring people with the skills and experience or certifications that they're looking for, and not as much necessarily budgetary resources are allocated internally to skilling up the people that are inside of organizations. So it becomes something where you have to drive your own career. You have to sort of treat your job as if you're the CEO of your own career. And, you know, if you need to do the nights, weekends, self-studying, it's an investment in you.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. And a lot of industries are like that. They hire you based on what you know and what you're able to do, your degrees, certification, and then, yeah, you need to keep investing in yourself. But do you find that these skill sets change rapidly, Mark?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think in the cybersecurity space, you know, it's... It's funny. I just thought of sort of one of the memes out there about looking for somebody with 10 years of Kubernetes experience for an entry-level position. And that Kubernetes hasn't been around for 10 years. and you're definitely not going to find a Kubernetes expert that's going to be willing to take an entry-level salary.
Yeah.
But I digress. I do think that the technology is certainly changing very rapidly. I think even, like I mentioned, cloud skills, even if you just focused on one of the large cloud providers, you can literally spend your career just staying up to speed on all of the changes that are happening, say, in Amazon Web Services. So it's important for people to stay plugged in, whatever you're doing, however little or however much you're putting into educating yourself. It's really key.
So would you define those as being the main challenges right now being faced by industry, your industry with respect to cybersecurity skills development?
Absolutely, I would. I think budget and time are two of the key areas, two of the key challenges. And when you have staff, you know, most organizations are pretty streamlined as it relates to their cybersecurity staff. When they're so busy with day-to-day operational tasks that they can't take the time to attend training or webinars, it's really challenging for them to maintain and update their skills unless they're doing it on their own time. And, you know, I just to add, I think on LinkedIn, you know, a lot of my peers, you see certifications being earned and they spending their mornings, evenings, weekends in self-paced, self-study type of training. It's kind of the new normal of, I was interviewing, I am interviewing for a couple of open positions. And some of the candidates that have come in, you know, for a security architect type role, I find it startling when they don't have any sort of, not having experience in one of the cloud platforms, I can kind of understand if you're with an organization that really hasn't committed to the cloud, but not having spent the time using a Cloud Guru or Linux Academy or any of the other types of Udemy, you know, Udemy has $10 course sales. Mm-hmm. Not spending the time to skill up on that, I think you're really just hurting yourself.
Mm-hmm. So it's like you said, a continual investment that you need.
It is.
To do. Mm-hmm. And then that makes you, like you said, more marketable and has more
Absolutely.
Appeal. Yeah. Yeah. More appeal to potential employers. Mm-hmm. So what are the future threats or pain points that could impact your industry, Mark? What could go wrong, you know, if these threats, you know, or pain points are not addressed?
Well, I think given the intersection of industries that I work in mm-hmm. healthcare and federal government healthcare, where, you know, we're custodians of mm-hmm. 1.5 billion healthcare records for U.S. U.S. persons, U.S. citizens, and mm-hmm. residents. The big pain point, and what could go wrong, mm-hmm. is if you have an unauthorized disclosure of healthcare data, and mm-hmm. you know that obviously could lead to identity theft, fraud, patient discrimination, or employee discrimination. If mm-hmm. Somehow an employer was using that information as part of their onboarding or their hiring practices, denial of benefits, and even blackmail. So it's something that we take very seriously at New Wave. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're being entrusted with protecting that data mm-hmm. on behalf of the federal government. So, you know, we take that very, very seriously. Mm-hmm. And in this space, under HIPAA, if you have an unauthorized disclosure or a breach involving 500 or more records, mm-hmm. well, that needs to be reported to the Office of Health and Human Services, mm-hmm. Office of Civil Rights, and at a minimum, you're going to be on their public wall of shame for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from a corporate branding reputation perspective, you know, that too is obviously a concern. You want to stay off that page.
Yes, yes, for your reputation, branding. So do you invest a lot in educating your clients about cybersecurity as part of your strategy when you take on new clients?
We do. In the federal government healthcare space, there's a requirement before you even get access to federal system or federal information that there's awareness training that you need to complete. Mm-hmm. We also have our own awareness programs. Mm-hmm. So there's initial onboarding, there's annual mm-hmm. awareness, there's monthly reminders. You know, we leverage things like the SANS Ouch mm-hmm. newsletter, which is fantastic information. Mm-hmm. You know, and besides awareness, then you have role-based training for individuals that may be in positions where they have access to sensitive information, or perhaps your finance department may be subject to a lot of phishing attacks, mm-hmm. Where having that awareness mm-hmm. allows them to, one, make sure that they have processes in place where one person is not able to, say, initiate a wire transfer. You have a two individual mm-hmm. requirement to do that. Mm-hmm. And training those people in privilege roles or with access to mm-hmm. sensitive data is key, and education. So I think as an organization, investing in your employees, mm-hmm. when you look at the cost of onboarding and when you look at the cost yeah. of lost productivity when you don't have those roles filled and the potential impact on your client, keeping the good people that you have on board, keeping them yeah. educated, keeping them happy, you know, yeah. it only serves you.
That's so, right. It's a smart thing to do, which is a bit of, you know, my last question to you in terms of actions that organization can take today to mitigate these threats. So education would be one of them. Are there others that you would suggest?
Yeah, I think education and awareness is key. Tying back to those soft skills, having your security team or your security and privacy team, building relationships with individuals in other departments, talking about things in terms of risk and risk management instead of security. I remember going to a director of HR's office at a previous job and saying, you know, I have some items that I really wanted to discuss with you related to how human resources, you know, how you do what you do. And the immediate response that I got was, well, I don't really know anything about security, so I'm not sure that I'll be able to help you. And my response was, well, I'm not here to talk to you about security. I'm here to talk to you about managing risk.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could just see her shoulders go down, the stress sort of leave her shoulders, and immediately you start talking to people in the language they understand. It's so important.
I guess on the other
reducing dwell time is important, especially when you're by reducing dwell time I mean the amount of time that attackers are on your network. We moved from a posture of not if I get compromised, but when I get compromised, right? So most company security departments should be taking an assume breach posture and looking to looking at their networks as if, you know, it's perhaps a harsh term, but as if it's sort of a toxic pool, and that you've got your information assets on these islands in your toxic pool, and you're just looking to find ways to get the attackers out of there, to detect them, to find them, and implement automation of deployments. That's another area where, when applications are being deployed in an environment, if you still have a manual process, you still have a high chance of human error. You still have dependency on heroes and sort of experts to get those applications deployed. So if you have adopted DevOps or DevSecOps with security as part of that, and you've automated your deployments, that changes the landscape. You know, that makes it so that you're not counting on experts to do those deployments. You're not worrying about, did somebody miss step 14 in this deployment? And I guess the last thing I could think of at the moment is security orchestration and automated response is a very promising technology. Obviously, there are certain incidents where you're not going to want to have an automated response, but there are other ones where you know the profile of an attack, or you look at the indicators of compromise, and you immediately have a sense of, oh, okay, here's what I need to do. In those cases, leveraging some of the newer technology that allows you to respond at wire speed. So if attackers are using automation to get into your environment, and you're counting on individual analysts in your security operations center to respond to those attacks, it will only help them if there are tools in the toolbox that that can initiate an automated response to slow down your attacker, to interrupt, you know, their process in terms of deploying payloads and trying to establish a foothold in your environment.
Wow. So you have to have multiple strategies in place to try to mitigate, you know, different types of risks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Mark, thank you so much for being our guest today and for sharing your insights into the new realities of work.
Well, thanks, Christine. I really appreciate you inviting me to be part of the podcast, and I look forward to listening to your future podcast as well.
Our pleasure.